Yes. A good Friday morning. Happy Friday, one and all. It is Taz and the Moose with you. Taz is off. Bogish is in the house. He'll be keeping me company for the next 3 hours as we go 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 Pacific. Double duty. Co-hosting and updates. Andrew Bogish, a very, very talented individual.
I'm Andrew Bogish.
Yes, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You've got Mikey B and Pete the Body across the way. Can't play a talking number to call, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227.
Attention hotline fans.
And got a good show on tap. We'll be joined by David Deal a little bit later on in the program. Looking forward to that. As Deal, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Giants, CBS Sports, NFL Fox, game analyst. So he will join us. We've got NFL picks. Austin Safarian Jenkins, Jaguars tight end, will join us in the second hour as well. As the Jaguars sent a message, not just to the Patriots a week ago, but across the National Football League with their pretty decisive victory against the Pats in a rematch of the AFC Championship game. So both AB and myself look forward to that. But we get it going here on this Friday morning with what we saw last night in Cleveland, and the Baker Mayfield era has begun. Because once Tyrod Taylor, goes out of that game last night due to injury and concussion protocol and takes a big hit, and Baker Mayfield steps into the game when that game is 14-0 and is able to orchestrate a comeback and, you know, first rookie quarterback to step into a game down 14-0 and win the football game since 2005 in his debut. I mean, so it's been a while since we've seen this, and I thought Mayfield was utterly brilliant last night, AB, for the Cleveland Browns. And the Brown fan can finally celebrate because the 600-day-plus journey without an NFL victory, well, that's over.
What is it, Coors Light?
Yes.
Dilly? Over the place last night.
Well, that's right. Well, no, Bud Light.
Bud Light.
Coors Light. Come on.
I don't know these things. Leave me alone. It's early.
Stop.
Dilly. I'm overwhelmed.
You got to get that right.
By what Cleveland got last night. I mean, dead in the water at 14-0. And I don't mean this in a demeaning way, in a heartless way.
Coors Light.
But this was the perfect scenario for them to get Baker Mayfield into the game when the decision wasn't theirs to make. They didn't have to pull Tyrod Taylor. They didn't have to bench him. Again, no one wants him hurt. I hope he's okay. But in their heart of hearts, like, this is, I think, the opening that they were fingers crossed, very discreetly hoping for, where they could put Baker out there because they had no other choice. And then he did his part of the bargain, played this well, four scoring drives. The place is electric. He's making throws to Jarvis Landry. In complete control of the offense, catches the two-point conversion. I wasn't going to go with utterly, what did you call him a second ago?
Brilliant.
Utterly brilliant, but
yeah,
man, he was damn good last night, and that place was going nuts.
Well, think about this. He was 17 of 23, and there were at least three or four Brown receivers that dropped the football. So he conceivably speaking could have gone 21 of 23 last night in his NFL debut. Now, you know, following the lost fumble, what was it, by Robbie Anderson of the Jets that was recovered by the Browns, 14-3 game, third quarter now, under 6 minutes to go, third and goal. I mean, the ball should have been picked. He threw it right to the defensive back or the Jets safety. Hits right off the shoulder pad, bounces up and out of bounds. Now, he kicked the field goal there, making a 14-6 game. So, I mean, that was really the one errant throw of the entire evening for Baker Mayfield. But aside from that, I mean, the youthful exuberance, you saw the celebration, you saw the team excited. It is a night and day difference when you look at Mayfield running that Browns offense as compared to Tyrod Taylor. There is no comparison in terms of throwing the football. I thought he threw the football brilliant. It was a perfect spiral. Everything had zip on it, hitting guys exactly where he needed to hit them, pinpoint control, whether they're putting on the numbers or putting on the hands. And accuracy, I thought he was utterly fantastic.
Yeah, and I not to read too much into things, but, you know, they've got the above the spider camera up above on the wires coming across the field, and they're right on top of the Browns huddle as he comes on the field for the first time. Obviously, his excitement was obvious and real, but the other guys seem to be pepped up as well. Then he throws the two bullets immediately, and I think it was Landry and Njoku, and they're getting up and they're ready to go. I mean, it looked like the players wanted him out there, and they know. I mean, this is not this is not a disrespectful conversation for Tyrod Taylor, but we all know what Tyrod Taylor is. He's a good quarterback. Other teams should want him, could use him, but not when you've got Baker Mayfield and all the things he could possibly be sitting behind him. I want to give the Browns credit for not forcing him onto the field if he wasn't ready. The idea that he could sit the entire year at least makes sense to me from the standpoint of he doesn't have to play just because he's the number one pick. That, to me, is oversimplified and can get yourself into too much trouble with putting a guy out there when he's not ready. But once he's ready, he should be playing over Tyrod Taylor. And he certainly, at least for two-plus quarters last night, looks ready to be out there now until for the rest of the season.
Well, he certainly does that. And I think he came out to it where all the bouquets, all the flowers are getting thrown at the feet of Sam Darnold of the Jets after the first couple of weeks, where people were predicting stardom. Tony Romo was saying that at one point in his career, he thinks he's got an opportunity to be the best quarterback in the National Football League. And all of that does not go away. But instead of Darnold going out to the field last night with a chip on his shoulder, you saw the youthful exuberance of Baker Mayfield, and I'm sure he heard it. You know, he was the number one overall pick, and all the heat and all the burn is around Sam Darnold, and he goes out on the field last night, and he clearly out and performs him. I mean, it was a night and day difference. It was Darnold thrown into double coverage, throwing a pick late, down 21-17, which was an awful throw. On first down that was picked off by the Cleveland Browns. It was Darnold at times with the errant passes, and when Baker Mayfield got an opportunity to play, and he got a hint. He started to get a vibe. Maybe Aikman and Buck were just throwing something up against the wall. And sometimes when you have these pregame meetings, the coach will give you a little something or a couple of things to keep an eye out for as a broadcaster, as long as you don't tell it before the broadcast or before right. The play does happen. But you got a sense and a vibe that somebody within the Browns organization told him there's a shot you're going to see Baker Mayfield tonight in Thursday Night Football. You got a couple of those references, especially by Aikman, over the course of the game. And it wasn't, as you mentioned, it wasn't due to down performance from Taylor. It was due to injury.
And you and I was, I felt like you last night. I was out doing other things late last night.
You were all over the place.
So I got to the game and it was 14-0. And it was the drive before Taylor got hurt, and they were doing nothing, and they were booing, and people were chanting for Baker. So I'm sitting there on my phone watching this game, and I'm like, I'm trying to put myself in Hugh Jackson's head. And when do you do this? This is too quick. Although, you know, and Taylor's been good but not great through their first two games, and now this, it's a short week. It's at home. It's on prime time. To me, once you go to Baker Mayfield, you can't go then back to Tyrod Taylor. So, you know, you're pulling Tyrod, and that's then your decision. And so I'm sitting there going, man, like, what? How do you do this? When do you do this? Is this right? Is he going to do it right now? I think he's going to do it right now because they want to win. And then Tyrod gets hurt, and now you're like, well, now he's got to go in there.
Right.
And then maybe he's going to only just take a knee before halftime, but no, they move down the field.
They do.
Then he's ruled out Tyrod Taylor. And now, I mean, Hugh Jackson can say whatever he wants after the game, but he doesn't need to waste time watching the tape and thinking about this.
No,
I mean, he knows his quarterback now.
Yeah, and let's hear from the Browns head coach following his second victory as Cleveland Browns head coach. I think he's 2-32, 2-32-1, I think is the record of Hugh Jackson as Browns head coach. Let's hear from him. I'm talking about the quarterback situation and Mr. Baker Mayfield.
Obviously, I like to watch the tape. Obviously, Baker did some great things. I mean, again, we don't play until next Sunday. We got some days. Let's not get into those debates tonight. You know, obviously, what he did tonight was outstanding for the football team and for his teammates and just the way he competed.
Yeah, and everyone's getting on Hugh Jackson. You got to watch the tape. I think it's also a little bit of respect for Taylor, too. They brought Taylor in to be the bridge guy, and everyone's going, getting hot and bothered. What do you mean you got to look at the tape? And, you know, as we made fun of Sean McDermott when the Nate Peterman, Josh Allen stuff was going on up in Buffalo, I got to analyze the game film, and he kept on saying that day and day, when he clearly could see, no offense to Nate Peterman, he's just not a starting NFL quarterback. Now, for what Hugh Jackson immediately after that game goes final last night, Andrew, I look at it, and he's meeting with the media. I think it's more of a respect for Taylor. You know, he leaves the game due to concussion. Mayfield steps in. He's now the conquering hero. Everybody in Cleveland is celebrating. Everyone's having a Bud Light. Taylor clearly is looking at a Taylor is clearly looking at a crossroads here, not just in his Browns career, but in his NFL career, because in all likelihood, his days as a starting quarterback, unless something injury-wise happens with Baker Mayfield, are over. I think it's a case of Hugh Jackson wanting to have a conversation with Taylor more so than him having to analyze the game film, because he follows it up. I've got to look at the tape, but he said, Baker Mayfield was outstanding today.
Right.
So he knows what he saw. We all witnessed what he saw. He was sitting on standing on the sidelines. He saw it. I think it's more of a respect for Taylor.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we can joke about what he could be doing other than watching the tape to make this decision, but it's absolutely that. He can't go up there and just kind of, blow Tyrod Taylor out of the water and put him on the bench for good.
Right, that would be like a douche move like Zimmer was the other day
right,
with the Vikings.
Exactly. So I get it, and I expect him, I mean, who knows, today. He's going to speak today, I would think, and he may tell us that right now or wait till next week, but I mean, it would be a monumental upset at this point if Tyrod Taylor is healthy and returns to being their starting quarterback. There's no turning back. I know it's a short sample size, and then we get into conversations of, now the next team is going to be prepared for Baker and whatever, but still, he's just, the ceiling is too real. He's prepared for the moment. The team responded so well to him being out there on the field. He's got to stay the starting quarterback.
Here is Mayfield on the starting job.
Not focused on that, singular focus, going to enjoy this one. It's, Coach Haley said, it's like winning twice. You play on Thursday and then you get to watch everybody else lose on Sunday. So, going to enjoy it right now, and then we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, and here is Mayfield talking about, he had individual success, but it's all about his teammates.
I was never trying to put too much on my shoulders, just trying to do my job, get the ball out in their hands. When you can do that, they're going to make plays for you. These guys are the best in the world at what they do. And so that's what my mindset, that's where I was at.
He got his first victory as an NFL quarterback last night. What about in the future?
Dilly dilly to the Cleveland fans. Yeah. That's, comes with it, but it's not the only win we're going to celebrate. It's a building block for us. Did some good things, but there's still a lot we can work on. And that's the great part about it. We're nowhere near where we want to be, but we're in a good spot right now to, build a foundation and keep going.
Well, dilly dilly.
Yeah,
dilly.
Dilly. You are. That is
Amstel
a great spot.
Light.
Yeah, exactly right. Coors Light, Amstel Light. It's actually Bud Light, but nice. Well, thanks for playing, AB. Anyway, I look at Mayfield and the criticism that he had in college in terms of his off-the-field behavior. There's no doubt his production. The question is, does his game translate? Do you go from the spread offense of Oklahoma, and really not just Oklahoma, but a lot of college teams now running that spread as a college quarterback and be able to translate, and your skill set be able to translate to the National Football League? And what we saw last night is it will. He did not look, I know he's not, he's all of about 6 feet tall. I get it. He looked clean. He looked decisive. He did not look, he had a great pocket presence and awareness about him. It often hits you early when you know a guy is going to be really good. And I know there are guys that have had really good debuts and turned out to be nothing. Mayfield's going to be a player in this league for a long, long time. And someone asked me a question yesterday and asked why. Well, now with all the burn on Darnold, are the Browns regretting drafting Baker Mayfield? I said, no, they love him and they absolutely adore him. And he's going to be a massive star in that town. He really is. And last night is just a sign of things to come.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's going to be bumps in the road. It's not going to be perfect from now. And he might have a couple of games because he's a rookie that he's going to regret and he's going to look stupid. And the throw you mentioned, not to overemphasize things, and maybe Pete would agree with me as the Jet fan in the room, if that pick that Middleton doesn't come down with, that eventually they kick a field goal off of, if he makes that pick, I wonder how different last night is, if there's that immediate kind of pushback in the face where he threw a pick, drive end, pointless, maybe they still win. But I wonder how different things would go if Middleton makes that catch instead of the ball ricocheting off his right shoulder pad. It's just, I'm with you. I mean, I liked him. I wouldn't have taken him before Darnold or Rosen back in the draft. I thought there was still too much room, boom or bust from him, less so, more, or I guess more so than these other two guys. But he has done everything correctly. I mean, just going back from the beginning and then them saying that Tyrod's our guy. I mean, he's never pouted. He's never complained.
Nope.
He's done the job. He's shown up. He's been goofy. He's been personable. I mean, that dilly-dilly line last night, man, that's money stuff from your quarterback, from the face of your organization. He's got the personality for it. That stuff's important, but more importantly is the way he's playing the game. And he's been, you know, he was good enough for the preseason to continue the conversation of, you know, maybe he should be out there and not Tyrod Taylor. And it's not easy coming off the sideline. No matter what the score is, to get thrown in there,
but
and he was great.
And the other thing, Andrew, is this. Thank God he came in. The game was a bore. I mean, that game last night, up until, and the Jets are winning the game 14-0. It's no knock on the Jets. The most intriguing thing was when Isaiah Crowell scored his second touchdown, and he wiped his rear end with the football three times and threw it into the end zone, got a 15-yard penalty on sportsmanlike conduct, but the former Brown obviously ticked off about the way it all ended in Cleveland. But aside from that, the game was terrible. I mean, he comes in, and not only did he light up the football world, he light up the city of Cleveland. I think he woke everybody up watching that game last night. It was a terrible football game.
It was Browns-Jets.
It was awful.
It was everything
we
thought.
It's not just Browns-Jets. The Thursday night product, on average, has not been a great product.
No.
Regardless of opponents, it does not matter. The Thursday night product does not lead to great football. Baker Mayfield made Thursday night fun again.
Did you see, I don't know if you saw this tweet last night or during maybe late in the afternoon, but it was like the first time since like 2005 for the Browns and 2006 for the Jets that Aikman and Buck had worked their game. Now, part of that is because it's AFC teams and they're at Fox and NFC for the most part, but there's been no crossover, no important game that they've put them in the prime. It's like those two guys haven't seen them in so long. And I mean, at 14-0, when I turned my phone on to watch the game in a car going home last night from Manhattan, there was nothing. There was it had, no. That game had like 17-9 written all over it,
so
and
you,
going to sleep.
So
third
you emceed
quarter.
Event last night, right?
I did. Yes.
How'd it go?
I thought it was okay.
Working some jokes, one-liners.
I tried. I don't. You know,
work in the room.
I was the MC of the Fordham football like kickoff dinner.
Black tie affair?
No. Just regular, you know, any kind of tie.
Okay.
So my opening.
Tuxedo.
No. When I introduced myself, I said, you know, good evening. I'm your host. I'm Andrew Bogish, starting left guard, class of 2002, because I am like 4'10", 1'9", you know, 1'10", and I got a chuckle or two. I said, Would you have believed kicker? That another laugh, but not what I wanted. And then we were done with jokes. I needed that. I should have brought that with me. I should have brought Pete. Pete would have been funnier than me and my voice.
You should go with that laugh track whenever you MC an event. Because people will start laughing.
I'll download it on my
phone. You can make the corniest joke ever. And or you could just make that whenever.
It's magic.
Will the Mayfield success continue? And Antonio Brown speaks. We'll get into that. We'll give you a little bit of a jet fuel to last night's game as well, as they blow a 14-0 lead, and now all the pressure in the world is on Todd Bowles, as the naysayers of Todd Bowles are coming out of the woodwork left and right. But as we roll right along here on this Friday morning, we got a lot to get to. Austin Seferian Jenkins is going to join us later on the program. David Deal is going to join us later on the program. We got college picks. We got NFL picks. AB in for Taz. It's Taz of the Moose with you right here on CBS Sports Radio. Football season finally underway, and if you play fantasy football, the odds are you probably already hate your team and wish you could draft one again. You could do it right now on FanDuel. You can draft a new team every single week. That is DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports. It's easy. You like a matchup, you like a player, you like a specific guy to have a breakout game, or a guy that's been hurt, banged up, on suspension, coming back to a team that you think is going to be a breakout star. You go from there. I mean, I think it's fascinating when you look at the Green Bay scenario, especially about with the lack of health of the knee of Aaron Rodgers and whether or not he is going to give it a go this week against the Washington Redskins. But if you're a daily fantasy player, you have to put that into the equation. Certainly I do when you're looking at the likes of Devontae Adams or Jimmy Graham, or Randall Cobb, who all of a sudden looks like the Randall Cobb from 3 or 4 years ago, and not an old Randall Cobb like he has for the last year and a half. So I think you individually, my key thing when I look at when I play daily fantasy sports is this. Matchups reign supreme. Put all preconceived notions, whether you like a team, like a player. No, matchups lead the way. Take all emotion out of it. It's a business. It is an investment. That's the way you got to look at it, especially with daily fantasy sports. If you're not a fantasy expert, then FanDuel is clearly the place to play. FanDuel has something for everyone, and there are more ways to win than ever before. New users get a $20 bonus when they make their first deposit on FanDuel. Come play with me right now at FanDuel.com/CBS Sports.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Mayfield is in a pistol formation right now, and now he's running away from center, and the snap goes to Duke Johnson. Then they flip it around, then they throw it, and Mayfield caught it! The Philly special, Cleveland style! David Njoku!
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Browns Radio Network. You know, Jarvis Landry after the game said we got to rename that play. But it is the Philly special. It is the Philly special. Here's Hugh Jackson talking about that play and whether or not the Browns, if they got that play from the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's take a listen.
We didn't steal it from them. I mean, please. I know everybody want to think that. We've had that in our back pocket for a while, you know. Go check my tricks from before and go check Todd's tricks from before. We all got them. You know, it's just when you pull them out and use them, that's what that is.
Yeah, I mean, come on. All of a sudden now he had it years before the Philadelphia Eagles used it in the Super Bowl, what have you. It does not matter. It worked last night, and that tied the game up at 14, the two-point conversion as the Browns go on to the 21-17 victory. This game preview is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. $5 game pitchers, cocktails, cheeseburgers, and brats. When football is on, you have to be at Buffalo Wild Wings. Price and participation may vary. How about Saints and Falcons this Sunday? Should be a good one. Both teams come into it 1-1 records on the air, featuring a pair of star wide receivers. Absolute studs when you think about daily fantasy or fantasy sports or just as football players. Michael Thomas of the Saints with 269-yard receiving and 3 touchdowns on the season. And then you got Julio Jones for the Atlanta Falcons. Has yet to get into the end zone as the Falcons' red zone woes do continue. But still, absolutely. I mean, he is arguably, you can make the argument that he's the best receiver in the NFL, most physically gifted receiver in the NFL. If not, he's clearly top 2 or top 3. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. AB, let's head out to Pennsylvania. It's Jared. It's CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Jared?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Jared.
So I have just a quick comment and then a quick question. My comment is, like, I totally agree with you on the Hugh Jackson coaching thing. You know, he's shown respect to a veteran and to Tyrod Taylor and not to say to the media right off the bat, you know, Baker Mayfield to start. He's probably going to, most likely, I would think, sit down with Tyrod and say we're going to go with Baker, and that's probably more of a just professional move on his part. But if he doesn't do that, I know one of the fears, like, if my friend, I'm not a Cleveland Browns fan, but I know my friends that are Browns fans, like they don't have any confidence in Hugh Jackson at this point. So I was texting a friend last night, and they were like, they were hoping that he's really not going to botch this situation, like somehow go with like a quarterback by committee type of situation, which would be, I think, the worst possible situation that he can put his team in by saying, well, we're going to go with the hot hand, you know? Like, for me and for my friends that are Browns fans, I just hope that he names a starter, you know, and if it's Tyrod Taylor, Tyrod Taylor. If it's Baker Mayfield, it's Baker. But don't say we're going to go take it week by week.
I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's going to do that. But I also think, Jared, the logic there, it's an organizational decision.
Yeah.
This is not one man's decision. The Browns drafted Mayfield number one overall. He played last night. He starred last night. He led a Browns comeback. It was a great NFL moment and a great start to an NFL career. One game doesn't make a career. But this is the entire organization. When you draft a quarterback number one overall, They had a game plan of Taylor being the bridge guy to Baker Mayfield. They believe that he is going to be a star and the franchise quarterback for the Browns for a decade plus out there in Cleveland and help them win a lot of football games. This isn't Hugh Jackson's singular decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone plays a role. Everyone plays a role making that decision.
Definitely. And then my quick question is this. How has Hugh Jackson kept his job over the last few years? You know, it seems like in this day and age, a coach loses even just a game or two or three. They're automatically on the hot seat. Like, I understand, like you just said, as an organization, Hugh Jackson isn't responsible for every single, you know, decision in the organization. But he's still the head coach, and he still has professional football players. You know, I can't wrap my mind around how he has kept his job when he has the record that he has had. So I wonder if you can give me a little clarification on what he's done and why he kept his job during this terrible season.
Well, I think the owner likes him, number one. Number two, there were little to no expectations to win, to the point where they're taking on Brock Osweiler's contract in order to add a draft pick. I mean, think about that. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about the Cleveland Browns. It was all about this past April's NFL draft, Bogish, where they had a litany of picks. I mean, you could people were pointing out last night they gave up the 65th overall pick for Tyrod Taylor, who in all likelihood his Cleveland Brown career is going to be starting three games. And that's going to be it unless some injury happens to Baker Mayfield. Is that going to be great valuation of that draft choice? Probably not, no. But that's exactly what they did in bringing Taylor over from the Buffalo Bills. Now, with that being said, there was little to no expectations in Cleveland. And that's why Hugh Jackson, he's got a good relationship with the owner. They changed the general manager. They bring Dorsey in. They flipped the script with the offensive coordinator as Todd Haley goes from the Steelers, where he had worn out his welcome with Roethlisberger, and now goes to the Cleveland Browns. And I think it's all about relationships where they believe that Hugh Jackson is the right guy for this team right now. He might not be the right guy when this team is ready to win a Super Bowl or ready to compete in the AFC North, but right now they believe that he is the right guy for the job.
Yeah, and not to make excuses for Hugh Jackson, because I do think that there will be a different head coach for the Cleveland Browns if they go to even close to the elite level. Like, I don't think that Hugh Jackson is the one that finishes the job from a winless season to them being one of the best teams in their division, let alone the best team in the AFC. The upward trajectory doesn't always include him in my mind, but the problem becomes, like, how do you judge a guy when he's kind of surrounded by crap? I mean, because if you look and watch and rate coaches from game to game, you can't ignore the fact that guys have talented players or they don't. And to me, a lot of coaches, Moose, make the same mistakes. I mean, you can go from Bill Belichick to the guy who you think is the worst head coach in the NFL, and I don't know that your angst with, like, clock management and timeout usage and third and fourth down aggressiveness, like, they all kind of have the same problems. Where other guys end up looking worse is because their mistakes are magnified by the lack of talent around them, that they didn't get a chance to actually make a good decision because their guys can't get the job done against the guys across the line of scrimmage from them. So, you know, again, I don't love Hugh Jackson, but I do think everybody deserves a chance to be judged when they have a good roster, and they have a much better roster now than they did when he took the job.
Yeah, totally and completely agree. To hammer that point home, look at how many draft choices over the last 7-8 years for the Cleveland Browns are actually still with the team, especially first-round draft choices.
Disasters.
Little to none. They've had a disastrous time. Their scouting department, which has been overhauled by Dorsey, of bringing talent players in, and that's what you need to do as an NFL team, is using that draft not only to draft star players and foundation pieces, but also guys that are going to play specific roles for your team. And number two is, if you want to look at specifically this season for Hugh Jackson, if their field goal kicker did his job, and I'm not going to just put it all on Gonzalez, but let's be real here. They were better than New Orleans last week.
Right.
And they easily could have beaten the Pittsburgh Steelers week one. You could be looking at a Browns team on this Friday morning after their victory last night as a 3-0 football team. And there's something to be said. You need talent to win. Hugh Jackson and the Browns last night were a favorite at home for the first time since what? 2015?
Yeah.
2015, they were a favorite. He's not a great head coach, but belying the point, there's not a lot. There was not great talent around him either. So you can't really do all that much if you don't have great players around you. We'll see what he's able to do this year. Clearly, this is a different Browns team. You saw it during Hard Knocks. You see it on the field now. Myles Garrett is a stud. They've got depth at running back. Landry sets the tone of receiver. You're going to see Mayfield. The offensive line is no great shakes. Denzel Ward looks like he's going to be an absolute stud at the cornerback spot. The corner, former Ohio State cornerback that they drafted fourth overall. So there's things to like about what's going on in Cleveland right now.
Which is saying a lot for a team that still may, I still don't know how many more wins they're going to get this year. It may only be, you know, one or two more, to be honest, because they're still not that good. But they seem to have, in a pretty quick amount of time here with John Dorsey, at least put a couple of better pieces in place. And now we'll see what Hugh Jackson actually is. Now that he's got guys around him to put in better places that can actually accomplish things on the field, we'll really see how good he is. And maybe we'll, you know, the caller and some others will change their mind about what Hugh is going forward. Or maybe at some point they'll have to change head coaches. But for now, I mean, just feel good about last night. 635 days. That's a long time and a lot of heartbreak and kicks in the guts, losing football games like these first two this year. So just enjoy your Bud Light today.
Yeah, I mean, the Coors Light, as you said, Bogus, was flowing last night in Cleveland. You are doing double duty this morning.
It's really not that significant, but I appreciate you,
you
pretending
are.
That I'm tough for doing this.
No, I'm not saying you're tough. I'm saying you're doing updates and you're co-hosting a show. That's double duty.
Yeah, it is, I guess.
Well, it is. I mean, facts are facts.
Well,
take
thank
it
you.
Away.
Your first report this morning is brought to you by Werner. Thank you to all of the hardworking pros out there. Werner, the official ladder of pros everywhere. It was Christmas Eve 2016. Christmas Day didn't come until last night in Cleveland.
18 seconds left. He's got the snap. Back to pass. Up in the pocket. Shooting it long and deep. And it's picked off. They got it. Terrence Mitchell's got it. And it's all over here now. They can't take it away anymore.
Jim Donovan, Browns Radio. 635 days between wins for Cleveland. The second longest winless streak since the merger, ending at 19 games. The Browns turning a 14-0 hole into a 21-17 decision over the Jets. The comeback engineered by Baker Mayfield. He replaced Tyrod Taylor, who suffered a concussion late in the second quarter, and led four scoring drives, two field goals, and two Carlos Hyde touchdown runs, with Mayfield catching a two-point conversion after the first. Jets head coach Todd Bowles says Mayfield didn't catch them off guard.
They were the same plays. We knew what the quarterbacks were. We knew one ran more than the other. He just did a good job, and we didn't.
Browns head coach Hugh Jackson not committing just yet to his starter for week four. Titans QB Marcus Mariota increased his workload of practice yesterday, a big step towards playing Sunday in Jacksonville. Mariota was still dealing with tingling in his fingers after hurting his elbow in week one. He didn't play last weekend. On their third try, the Red Sox won the AL East last night at Yankee Stadium. They blew an early 4-2 lead with Giancarlo Stanton crushing a go-ahead grand slam, but they eventually won 11-6, four hits, five RBI for Mookie Betts.
We haven't won anything yet, you know, or we haven't won what we want to win yet, so I think you have to just take things in stride. We'll enjoy tonight, and then we'll be ready to get ourselves ready for postseason.
Amstel Lights for everybody.
Yes.
The Yanks, meanwhile, only a game and a half clear of the A's for home field in the wild card game. It is. The Rays are 6.5 behind Oakland. Despite an 8-2 lead on the Blue Jays last night, Toronto scored seven times in the ninth to win 9-8. Tampa Bay had won five straight. The first-place Braves took the first of four from the second-place Phillies, 8-3. That drops Atlanta's magic number in the East to four. The Nats, 5-4 losers in 12 to the Mets. Tiger Woods and Ricky Fowler share the lead after round one of the Tour Championship, 5-under 65s. Tiger closing with an eagle yesterday. Justin Rose is one shot back, Rory McIlroy two. And the NHL has suspended Canadiens winger Max Domi for
rightfully so.
Rest of the preseason. That's five games for sucker punching Florida defenseman Aaron Ekblad in the face two nights ago. Moose?
All right, let's head out to Richmond, Virginia. It's Chris at CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Chris. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. So my comment is, I know you guys are talking about Bill Belichick and comparing him to Hugh Jackson and whatnot coaching. You guys know Bill Belichick was a Cleveland Browns coach for the first 5 years. They had a losing record. His fifth year, they were 5-11, and that's when he left to go to New England. So with Hugh Jackson, I mean, I just don't think it's fair. You know, if he's able to get him out of the, you know, losing records and all this losing they've had, I mean, I don't know why you would say that, you know, he doesn't deserve to coach him in the playoffs, coach him, you know, to the promised land. That's just my thing.
Well, this is – how many go-arounds now is it for Hugh Jackson as a head coach?
Yeah, but look at his general managers. I mean, his general managers have sucked. I mean, look at the draft picks they've given him. You know, that's not all his
fault.
Look
at,
that's what you were talking about.
Number, if you're going to draw the comparison to Belichick first go around in Cleveland, let's not forget he was also there as Art Modell was trying to orchestrate the move of the Cleveland Browns to the Baltimore Ravens, and a season completely fell apart where they were one of the more talented teams in the AFC. So it's easy to look at his record, and he ultimately failed. I get it. And he was not nearly as successful, but there were also signs, and there was also the resume that Belichick had as a defensive coordinator with the Giants, and then going back and working for Parcells with the Jets before he got another opportunity with the New England Patriots. So, listen, Hugh Jackson is still coaching the team. We'll see how it finishes out this year. If they win 7-8 games this year, Hugh Jackson's going to be back next year. And
yeah,
maybe we'll be eating crow in 4 or 5 years as we sit here doing this show, and Hugh Jackson's lifting up the Vince Lombardi trophy. I got to see it to believe it. That's all, Chris. I think he's a great head coach.
If he's 8-8, does he get coach of the year?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, if he's 8-8, yeah, I would think you go from winless to 8-8, yeah.
Super Bowl champs, you know, and all that good stuff. If he's 8-8, 500, does he get coach of the year? That's what I'm trying to say. I mean, I think John Dorsey's the best person they've hired in a long time, obviously.
And nobody works Gubb better than Dorsey.
Yeah, great talk about him. So that's my comments for the day.
All right, you got it, Chris. Appreciate the call. Well, you're obviously a Jackson believer, and you believe in Dorsey.
But more,
and they've got an opportunity here. They're 1-1-1. They just won their first football game, and a star was stamped last night in Cleveland in the Thursday night comeback victory as Baker Mayfield orchestrated down 14-0 in the 21-17 victory. Coming up straight ahead, the Taz and the Moose and bogus college football selections. They come your way next. It's week 4 of the college football regular season. We'll get you those picks, all the winners and a lot of losers. It's Taz and the Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Rich Ackerman. Ion College Football means great college football coverage tomorrow at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, time right now to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Submit your question. Be listening later on the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Can guarantee low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right. Let's get to it. Some college picks.
The Taz and Moose picks are for fun only. This is not for gambling purposes, just some chuckles and a good time. Enjoy the Taz and Moose picks now. Listen irresponsibly.
It's now time for the Taz and Moose college football picks. The three picks you need to know.
Yeah, today it's 9. So we're giving you 9 picks. 9 picks to lose your hard-earned money on. No, just kidding. It's all for fun. No one's keeping score. Well, kind of. Mikey B, what did we do so far this year?
In the college realm, Taz is 2-7.
Ooh. Okay.
And you're 5-4.
Yeah. Oh,
all right. There we go. We're rallying. All right. Here
it's
we go.
You. Good pick and Jones.
Pick one for me. We're going to go quickly here because we don't have a lot of time. But I'm going to take the Wolverines, 19th-ranked Wolverines, home against the Nebraska Cornhuskers, laying the big number, the 17.5. issues at quarterback for Nebraska. They've looked awful first couple weeks. Lost to Colorado, lost to Troy. I mean, that is as bad as it gets for the Scott Frost era. I don't see it changing in Ann Arbor. A noon kickoff on Fox Sports 1 on Saturday. Give me the Wolverines to get healthy on a banged up, talentless. That's a little strong. Not so good. Nebraska team. That's a strong. Talentless is a little strong. Even I started to cringe after I said that. A struggling Nebraska squad. How about that? Lay the 17.5. Give me Michigan. That's pick one. Bogus.
Moose, as we mentioned last night, I was emceeing the Fordham football kickoff dinner, the Gridiron Club. So I'm in a Fordham Rams, my alma mater mood. So all three of my picks today will have Fordham connections. This is a direct one. I don't know the line because I don't think they have one for FCS games, but I'm taking my Rams to get their first win of the season tomorrow afternoon in the Bronx against Central Connecticut State.
Stanford goes to Oregon. Oregon is plus +2. Stanford wins the game. Best regards, Taz.
All right, there you go. That's Taz's selection. My second pick.
Great audio quality. Yeah,
no question. second pick, we're going to go on Wake Forest. I'm going to take the Fighting Irish, and I'm going to lay the 7.5. Also a noon kickoff, ABC on Saturday. Give Notre Dame credit, 3-0. Pressure on Kelly this year. They've got opportunity to run the gamut this year. So I'm going to take the Irish, lay the 7.5 against Wake Forest, pick 2.
Interesting pick, Moose. Nobody, as you know, goes to Winston-Salem and beats Wake Forest by more than 7 points. The head coach of the Demon Deacons is Dave Clawson, who was the head coach when I was a student at Fordham. So I'm taking Wake.
Wow.
And those points against the Irish tomorrow.
So we're going to go mano a mano in this
head
one?
Head to head. Unbeknownst to me.
Now, let me ask you, is every one of your selections have some Fordham theme to
I
it?
I said that moments ago, Taz. That is correct, yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
I know. I'm joking around. I know you said it. And since you emceed the football event last night.
Yes.
Very nice. Well done.
Big Ten battle. Big Ten battle. Wisconsin goes to Iowa City to fight the Hawkeyes. Hawkeyes plus +3. Take Wisconsin. They battle back. Best regards, Taz.
There you go. All right, that's the second
Jones. He sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's a...
Come on, Pete.
Well, no, it works. It works. It all works. Pick number 3 for me. So my first two picks here, I'm going to take Michigan laying the 17.5 at home against Nebraska. Pick 2. I am taking Notre Dame laying the 7.5 on the road against Wake Forest. Pick number 3 for me. I'm going to take the Texas Longhorns to get themselves to 3-1. TCU put all the chips in the middle of the table last week in that game at AT&T Stadium against Ohio State, and they played well. They're just not the Buckeyes. And I think there might be a little bit of a drop-off. You look at Texas, the Longhorns took care of business last week when everybody and their mother was basically jumping on USC and jumping all over Tom Herman. Longhorns at home took care of business against the Trojans. I'm going to take Texas to pull a little bit of an upset. Plus +3, TCU on the road. I'm going to take the Longhorns plus +3 against the 17th-ranked Texas Christian. Give me Texas plus +3. Picks
Moose,
3.
Not sure I've mentioned that all my picks are Fordham-related. Here's the third and last one. Joe Moorhead was the Rams head coach,
well then done.
Ran Penn State's offense. Now he's in charge of Mississippi State. They're given 9 at Kentucky. I'm cool with that. Take those points, Wildcats. I got Mississippi State tomorrow.
Arizona State travels to Washington. Washington minus -17. Coach Herm, I love your Sun Devils. Not so much in this one. Washington, even though that minus -17 wins the game. Best regards, Taz.
All right, so he likes Washington to cover the spread, I would imagine there. Not just win the game, but also cover the spread. There you go. There are your three picks. To recap your Fordham theme selections, they are bogus.
Fordham over Central Connecticut State. Line doesn't matter. Wake plus +7 and
seven
Mississippi
and a half.
State minus
You'll take
9.
The hook. You'll take the hook.
Take the hook.
Don't leave the hook out.
Hook me, baby.
Don't leave the hook out. You'll be thanking me. Notre Dame wins that game by a touchdown. You'll be like, you'll be coming in. I'll come in Monday morning. You'll be celebrating. How about Wake Forest?
As long as I'm better than Taz, which
yeah, there you
apparently
go.
Isn't
my pick's Texas plus +3. Notre Dame laying the 7.5. Michigan laying the 17 at home. Coming up, we'll run around week 3 NFL next. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.